It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said that patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have three square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out the website, kimmunson.com. Very important show planned for you today. We will be talking with Pam Long regarding the vaccination bill that was heard yesterday in the first segment. Second segment, Samantha Cook is running for House District, I think it's one. I'll make sure with her on that in the second segment to talk about some bills that were very important bills that died down at the State House. And then in the third and fourth segment, we will be talking with DeRoy Murdoch. He is a columnist with the National Review about a very important piece. As Trump rounds third, he talks about all the successes that President Trump has had within the last 3 years, so you won't want to miss that. President Trump is going to be down in the Colorado Springs today. So a lot of folks are heading down for that. That'll be very, very exciting. But as we look at these issues, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And socialism was in full force last night at the Democrat debate. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. If something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to use force to implement it. And it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, or Steve, your favorite, unpredictable and excessive taxation.
I'm about to, about 10 days away from paying property tax, the first half, you know, which is 27% higher than it was a year ago. So, yeah, I don't really want to talk about it.
Yeah. These policies, ultimately, as we are seeing these policies putting in place, I mean, it could start to price people out of their homes because of the increase in property taxes. And we're seeing down at the State House, there's all kinds of ideas to try to increase property taxes and other taxes. And we're seeing the fruition of the consequences of our votes down at the State House. And that is why we are like laser focused to let you know on what is happening down there. Because we're continuing to see the socialization, Steve, of transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, data, healthcare. And when we really see what's happening with that, it's time to push back. What were you going to say, Steve?
Or the consequences of other people's votes.
but that's why we do the show, is we need to engage in the battle of ideas to persuade people, explain to them and persuade them to vote for people that are going to stand for them as the individual instead of this collectivism that we're seeing down there. But before we get into all that, I want to say thank you to you, Steve, our team, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for all your excellence, your good work. And thank you to each of you listeners. You're valued, you're treasured, you have a purpose. Strive for excellence and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Since President Trump is going to be down in the Springs today, you know, he gets a bad rap. A lot of people don't understand or have not listened to some of the great things that he says. So for our inspiration and our quote for today, I thought we'd go to Donald Trump. And if this doesn't give you hope, I don't know what will. He says, "No dream is too big. No challenge is too great. Nothing we want for our future is beyond our reach." And that's President Donald Trump. Pretty good words, Steve.
Yeah, I'm excited because quite a few KLZ people are going to be down there throughout the late afternoon and the evening. And I'm just excited to hear what they're going to have to say about it tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. But it's very, very exciting that he's coming to Colorado. And certainly he's coming indicate a support for Senator Cory Gardner. And it is really important that Senator Gardner be reelected because we need to have this firewall to prevent another impeachment. The Democrats have gone so far to the left that they don't want everyday people to thrive and prosper, they would much rather have Donald Trump and his policies fail than actually do what is good for everyday people. And so when we talk with DeRoy Murdoch, this will give you some good talking points when you speak with people about the great accomplishments of President Trump. Not a perfect guy, I get that. None of us are. But I think he gets up every day and thinks, what can I do for everyday hardworking Americans? So with that, our funnies. Steve, are you ready for this one?
Well, I peaked, and yeah, I'm really ready for this one.
Okay, Michael Bloomberg announced that if elected president, he will consider decriminalizing pot. But you get caught with a 64-ounce soda, and it's the slammer for you.
Well,
I mean, honestly,
if he continues on after the pounding he took last night, I don't know why he'd want to, but all his nanny state ideas, they're going to dog him from here till November.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of the debate last night, and Elizabeth Warren was, she seems just shrill to me. But you have a couple of sound bites. Let's hear those, Steve.
All right. The first one is right out of the gate. She was like the first one to speak, and he was right to her right, and she just blasted him.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
Now, that's going to be the most played soundbite across the nation today. But then she wound up with this, and it was kind of a challenge to the rest of the people on the stage.
Look, I'll support whoever the Democratic nominee is, but understand this. Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another.
So, there you go.
Wow. Yeah, he's gonna have to spend a lot more money, I think, today. I saw yesterday that he was paying, I want to say, like 30,000 people to, send out supporting tweets and Facebooks. Post in support of him. So he's trying to buy this election, Steve. But we've got a lot to talk about today. On the line with me is Pam Long. She's going to give us an update on what happened regarding Senate Bill 2163. Pam, I was not able to get down there to the Capitol yesterday. What happened?
So, Kim, we had about 350 people, families, show up to the Denver Capitol to oppose this SB 163 school immunization bill, compared to about 50 people. These are like lobbyists, recruited type people, professionals to be proponents of this bill. Testimony went from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. I just got home like an hour ago. Most people stayed up all night. The committee passed this bill through on a party line vote, 3 Democrats, 4 2 Republicans against, all 5 members of the Senate Health Committee, citing the bill is very flawed, serious database concerns for anyone who exempts from one vaccine, serious bullying and threats to students were in testimony yesterday. The loss of religious rights at stake in this bill, total lack of stakeholder process for anyone opposed to this bill, just shut out, far-reaching to include homeschoolers and all kids, all students, and a very one-sided vaccine education module where there will be no mention of risk, no mention of adverse reactions. It's just people need to wake up and get involved and contact their senators on this bill.
Okay, so what is the next action on this? And can you tell us the names of each of the senators and how they voted?
Yes, so first of all, the senators that fought for families were Senator Lundeen, Senator Smallwood. Those are both Republican senators. They were up all night fighting for families. And then the senators, the Democratic senators who were, polite but pushing this bill through with its flaws are Senator Fields, Senator Winters, Senator Jinal. I mean, so many of their constituents were there last night, and they voted. They said they were under pressure. There were so many lobbyists there last night, all night. I've never seen anything like it.
Okay, so what's the next thing that can be done on this then, Pam Long?
The next thing is people need to contact their state senators today, starting today, over the next week, every day, flooding emails, flooding phone calls, visit the Capitol. They just need to be in constant presence in every way with their state senators saying, the people of Colorado did not bring you this bill. This is an industry bill. This is a far-reaching bill on parental rights and religious rights, and you oppose SB 163, the school immunization bill.
You know, Pam, we're going to be talking with Samantha Cook in the next segment. And there were, I think, around seven bills that were presented, and they all died in committee, and they were about parental rights and really standing up for children. And I'm going to be talking with her about that. And so we have to understand that you can't look at this just as one bill. You have to look at the big context, because those that are pushing through this this coerced vaccination bill, they are saying that they're wanting to do this because they imply they want to protect children. But when we look at the big picture out there, it does not seem that they really want to care. They don't care about children. This is really about coercion and force, but they're hiding behind caring about children to push this forward. And so we have to look at the big picture, because what I see is they don't really care about children. This is about coercion, force, and all these other things that you mentioned, Pam Long.
Absolutely, this is coercion and control. No one in this room, no one from the health department, no one from the bill sponsors, no one could answer the basic question that was asked for 14 hours. Why do you need someone's address for health? Why? What are you doing with this? No one could answer that question. And I'll tell you, it is to target people who exempt from any one vaccine.
And another point I want to make is let's look into the future. You mentioned that there were many, many lobbyists that were there. Many of them might be industry lobbyists. So instead of having to persuade people to use your product, if you can get government to force people to have to use it and then have to pay for it, or use government taxpayer money to force other people to have it, then you don't have to compete in the battle of ideas. Your product doesn't have to compete. So looking into the future, we could have industry that's developing things like this HPV vaccine, which HPV is sexually transmitted. But yet in New York, there is a legislation being put forward that would force every seventh grader going into public school to actually have this vaccine. And looking into the future, see the danger, my friends, that there may be things out there that you may not want to have injected into your body. And under these kinds of laws, you would not be able to say no. There's big danger in this, Pam Long.
Big danger. And the last part of this bill that's kind of stealthy in the language for the advisory committee of the CDC would actually give the health department just instant authority to make the HPV vaccine mandatory for all students, the influenza vaccine. Five additional vaccines overnight could be required, that most people, three out of four people, opt out of the HPV vaccine.
Boy, I tell you, we've run out of time on this. Let's stay on this, Pam. We'll get you back on the show. Just a question, though. Even though this was bipartisan, the Democrats pushed it through, and you said Senator Lundeen and Senator Smallwood, thank you for standing for family, standing for freedom. But this was bipartisan testimony out of those 350 families. What I've seen is that is across the political spectrum.
Absolutely. This is a diverse crowd. Every age group testified opposed to this bill, every, you know, socioeconomic group, every nationality, multiple religions and belief systems, doctors, even medical doctors, testified against this bill. I mean, the only people who want this bill are the pharmaceutical industry people and people who benefit from the sale of vaccines.
Okay. Well, Pam Long, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for that update. Get a nap and then get ready to fight again. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is the place to watch all the games. March Madness is right around the corner. Rock Chalk Jayhawk. And Hooters Restaurants has plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of the action. Wednesdays are Dine-In Wing Day, all the wings you can eat for $15.99. If you don't want to cook, pick up Hooters wings, take them home, or you can have them delivered right to your front door. Check out my website, Kim Munson, that's MONSON.com. see all my sponsors there, and they have a landing page, and you can get all the information. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Samantha Cook, because we're connecting the dots. They say under this coerced vaccination bill they care about children, but then when we look at some of the things that were killed down there at the State House, we realize that they're not really walking their talk. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Hey, welcome back to the show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. On the line with me is Samantha Cook. She is stepping forward to run for House District 1 here in the state of Colorado, and she's on the line because there's a number of reasons why people are stepping up, and she's got several of them. Samantha Cook, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kim. Thank you for having me on.
Okay. We had you on a week or so ago, and a lot has happened since then. You were down at the State House. There were some legislation, some bills that were put forward that you are very concerned about. They died in committee. But let's go through those, because we just had Pam Long on the line, and we talked about this coerced vaccination legislation, and the implication is we want to coerce and have this happen because we care about children and families, but not so much. So let's go through these bills, Samantha Cook. Mm-hmm. What are you concerned about?
Right. So I did have the opportunity to spend quite a bit of time at the Capitol in the last couple of weeks. And last week, it was kind of an interesting lead into this vaccination bill. But there were about seven bills that were squished into one afternoon within the what's known as a kill committee. And I think a lot of people are getting familiar with what that is. But a lot of these bills had to do with parental rights. Regarding, you know, being the authority over their children and decision-making process and education and things like that. So let me just, I'll run through these real quick, give you a brief overview. Okay. There was HB 2011-44 and HB 2010-63, which were both, one of them was the Parents' Bill of Rights and the other one was the Fundamental Family Rights. They were very similar, and both of them were basically just saying when you as a parent, you want to have your rights acknowledged and established as the primary role in your child's medical decisions, mental health services, educational programs, overall well-being. And that includes things like making decisions on vaccines and whatnot. So the committee kept asking what rights parents have been taken away, but the point they failed to understand is that we're looking for this boundary to be set for the future as we see things like, you know, vaccine bills come out and different curriculums being introduced into our education system. Mm-hmm. We want to have the role in that. So there were those two bills, which were very similar. There was another bill, HB 2011-11, the parent authority to require education reform, where if a school is failing, it's in the parent's hands to be able to take immediate corrective action through petition to the school for improvement, whether it be regarding curriculum or changes in faculty, and basically putting the power in the hands of the people that know the school the best, the parents and the teachers.
Now, just a note on that. Samantha, yeah. And yeah. That is if you have a low-performing school, you can't get second grade back. You can't get third grade back for your children. And so this is absolutely astonishing to me that in this died in committee, that parents would not have some kind of, you know, could take action regarding a low-performing school. So on one hand, these activist Dems say that they are for kids, and then they kill this kind of stuff. It really is frustrating. Continue on, though.
It is. One of the next bills was HB 2012-73, the Equality and Fairness in Youth Sports Act, which basically would protect girls that are between the grades of 6 through 12 from competing against biological males. We're seeing all these girls, you know, these amazing athletes throughout our education system all over the country being squelched out by biological males because of their physical differences. And, you know, we're really kind of taking over the sports and taking those opportunities away from them. And it's unfair in a lot of ways. So we're kind of missing out on an important conversation there. And it's actually dangerous for them to compete in contact sports against biological mm-hmm. males and things like boxing and wrestling. And we're seeing a lot of major injuries because of that. Another one was
another quick comment I want to say on that.
Yep.
Where's the activist feminist on this? Where's the activist feminist that they say that they stand for girls? So I just did my editorial comment. Okay, continue.
That's exactly right. I want to know where they are mm-hmm. as well. Another one was HB 2011-14, protect minors from mutilization and sterilization. I understand this is a hot button topic. It was basically saying we want, you know, if adults have the authority to make the decision for themselves, if they want to transition to another gender, their bodies and their minds are fully formed by the time, you know, well, fully, but, you know, pretty much formed by the time they're 18, and they can understand the gravity of that decision. We have a lot of concern for young children making those decisions when, you know, we're seeing a statistic of about 85% of children and youth that grow out of these tendencies. So it's not a matter of expressing any kind of disdain for people that have this, you know, this desire in their life. It's we want to see it made at a time when they fully understand the decision. So I understand there needs to be a lot more conversation around that issue, but there is concern about making these decisions prematurely. There was the HB 2010-33. It's the Live and Let Live Act. This bill, I understand, again, one that needs to have more conversation, basically protecting religious freedom in how you conduct your business so we don't end up with more situations like what happened with the Masterpiece Cake Shop. You know, nobody wants to feel discriminated against, but also religious freedom is, you know, a constitutional right. It's a fundamental right of our country. So we need to have understanding from both sides of the conversation.
You know, and just a quick note on that regarding the Masterpiece Cake Shop is what we really need to see is I always looked at it not only as religious freedom, but as a property rights issue, that if, in fact, government could come in and say, if you don't affirm what we say you have to, then we are going to use policy to close down your business. And no matter where you are on the political spectrum, that should scare the living bejeebus out of you. So, OK, continue on.
Right, exactly. And on that note, you know, everyone likes to focus on, you know, the issue with the Masterpiece Cake Shop. But also, you know, as someone who, you know, believes in the Bible, would I be willing to promote non-biblical materials? You know, so it can extend to so many different areas, and we need to be able to have, you know, this foundation to rely on. And then the last one was HB 2012-72. It's the Colorado Natural Marriage and Adoption Act, which basically you know, this one I have mixed feelings about, and again, I think it needs a separate conversation about who should and should not be available to adopt children. And my problem with all of these bills is that they were lumped together in one afternoon, and even the parental rights bills, or when we're talking about education, all of them were labeled as hate bills. When I went on Twitter the next day, it was pointed out to me that the Democrat majority leader had tweeted out before any of these bills had been heard that they were getting ready for hate week in the Capitol, and that all of these bills were anti-LGBTQ. And when we lump all of these issues together, we're eliminating the crucial conversations mm-hmm. with all of the people that our public servants represent. And we're not able to hear the concerns of individuals and families based on a variety of issues. And, you know, saying that everything is hate, they're calling me hateful. They're calling you hateful. And, you know, they don't know anything about me. They don't know anything about you. And we're really trying to address issues one at a time and have productive and crucial conversations so that we can all make improvements and have a voice.
Boy, Samantha Cook, you've nailed it. If, in fact, you can't engage in the battle of ideas, you just start calling other people hateful or names. So, Samantha Cook, we're out of time right now. Keep us informed on what's going on. What is your website?
It is SamanthaForColoradoValues.com, all spelled out.
Okay, SamanthaForColoradoValues.com. Samantha Cook, thank you so much, candidate for HD1, and certainly I know you could use a little bit of any donations or contributions would be greatly appreciated. Keep us in the loop, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim. I appreciate it.
Okay, Jason McBride, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, just wonderful. How about you?
Doing just fine. So what's going to happen with the market after this crazy Democrat debate last night?
I don't think the Democrat debate has any effect on the market because none of them are ever going to be president. So why do you ask?
That was just my question. Are you going to go down to Colorado Springs today to see the president?
Oh, gosh, I would love to, Kim. I have tickets. I just can't swing, you know, leaving now to stand in line and be there all day and all that. So I feel lucky that we got to see him and got really good seats when he came here when he was campaigning. But I'm not going to be able to swing this one. How about you?
I'm not either. I would love to be there, but it's just not going to work. But I know a lot of folks are headed down there. So very quickly, though, we've talked a little bit about that early market indicator guide that you have. It's on the website. And I can't believe that we're now, 7 weeks into the new year. But that is a really cool little indicator. I'd recommend people check that out.
Well, it is. And the indicator guide talks about five different kind of early year occurrences that you might or might not want to watch out for. It's one of the things that we try to do in the guide is separate the wheat from the chaff, which ones have some meat on the bone and which ones really don't, because your time's important too, and you don't want to be wasting time paying attention to things they're talking about on TV that have been proven not to mean anything whatsoever. I also think it's kind of a fun guide, Kim. It's entertaining to read how these things work. So get your free copy of that by going to airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. Or give us a call, 303-694-1600. Natalie will be at the switchboard at 7:30.
Perfect. And Jason, we will talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day.
All right. Have a great show, Kim.
Great. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with DeRoy Murdoch regarding Trump's successes. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
If you change your mind,
take a chance.
I'm the first in line.
Take a chance.
Honey, I'm still free.
Take a chance
on me.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And be sure and go to my website and check out all the show recaps. And the podcasts are there, so when you want to re-listen to something, you can do that. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me DeRoy Murdoch. He is an American political commentator and a contributing editor with the National Review Online, as well as a contributor to Fox News, a senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research. He went to Georgetown for his undergrad and NYU for his for the business school. And welcome, DeRoy. It's great to have you on the show.
Kim, it's great to be on with you. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, you have written a really interesting piece that I had seen regarding Trump rounds third as he's getting into his third year, you know, getting through that. And I found it so interesting. It's like, I'd really like to get you on. You are very fascinating. You are a first-generation American. And you're Black. You take issue with the term African-American. So tell us a little bit about that, DeRoy.
Sure thing. Look, if you are from Nigeria or Kenya or the Ivory Coast, you moved to America, then you're African-American. I was born in Los Angeles, California, which last I checked is not part of Africa. and I live in New York City, which is not part of Africa. And so the term African-American makes all the hairs on the back of my neck stand up like a cockatoo's feathers. And the only reason that this phrase exists is back in, I think it was 1988, Jesse Jackson, who then was considered, quote, the president of Black America, quote, unquote, if you will, he decided, okay, we're now African-Americans, and at a press conference, and the reporters and journalists there wrote down, call them African-Americans. And all of a sudden, that term stuck. I don't remember being asked about it. I don't remember voting on it. I don't remember seeing it debated. It was just this brand new label slapped on every Black American from L.A. To Boston and points in between. And it's a sort of it's a linguistic self-segregation.
Uh-huh.
That sort of says, oh, we're Americans, but we're off in our own little corner. No, we're not off in our own corner. We're part of this entire country, the whole country, coast to coast. And I don't think there's any need. In fact, there's a lot of damage in trying to isolate ourselves from everyone else rhetorically and linguistically that way. So I totally reject that term, and anybody who calls me that gets corrected at once.
I bet they do, DeRoy Murdoch. And, you know, this language, this has been so subtle to divide us. And I think we're seeing that play out right now. There's a lot of things that divide us in America right now, and one of them is the opinions about President Trump, I would say. And when I saw your piece in the National Review, that Trump rounds third with an enviable big league record, and I went through that, I think a lot of folks don't understand just what has been accomplished in the last 3 years. So, DeRoy Murdoch, let's go through your piece. Why did you write the piece to begin with?
I wrote the piece because we were coming upon the third anniversary of President Trump's inauguration. I think it's always a good opportunity to look back at what anybody has accomplished, President Trump or any other politician for that matter. And I thought, after 3 years, let's see what this man has done after 3 years. And I just decided to list a number of his accomplishments, sort of grouped together under categories, and make the point that whether you like what President Trump has done or whether you hate what President Trump has done, he has accomplished a lot. I think 90% of what he's done has been great. A lot of people think 90% of what he's done has been terrible. But nobody can argue, I think, credibly, that he's, quote, unfit to be president and is not doing his job and is either lazy or too crazy or distracted or pompous or arrogant to perform. He's done a lot of things. A lot of them are rather revolutionary. I think they're, for the most part, great. Other people may hate them. And I think we all should agree that, yes, this has been a very effective president who's gotten a whole lot of things done. And that's something I imagine the left, as much as they hate him, probably won't concede, because they won't concede anything about him other than the notion that that he's some kind of a either dictator or drooling moron, or maybe a combination of the two.
Well, and that seems to be all people have many times. And if you can't, deliberate and actually come up with concrete, things to talk about, then resorting to name calling and diminishing the opponent, I find may mean that you just may not have a lot of meat to your argument.
I think it's very true. I think a lot of the criticism against President Trump is just ad hominem remarks. Oh, I don't like his style. I don't like the way he talks. I don't like what he does on Twitter, blah, 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 blah. And that avoids the that just sort of precludes you from discussing what he's actually done in terms of things like the lowest unemployment rate for Blacks, Hispanics, and Americans of Asian background in history, the lowest unemployment for women since 1953 under Dwight David Eisenhower, the fact that America is now energy independent. We're now the number one exporter of oil and gas on the planet. Imagine that. It's not Saudi Arabia. It's not Russia. It's the United States of America. Some wonderful things he's done, which have been rather unheralded, such as the right to try law, which says if you are terminally ill and you've got a few months to live, you can get access to experimental drugs that up until now the FDA said, oh, we can't give that to you because you might die. Of course, you're about to die anyway. And President Trump said, okay, great, you give it a try. It may work, it may not work, but at least you have the opportunity to try to use an experimental drug that's gone through phase one trials, but not phase two and phase three trials at the FDA, and try to see if that will save your life. And if it does, wonderful. And actually, some people have tried experimental drugs and it saved them, and now they're alive as opposed to being 6 feet under.
Really? I did not realize that. Huh.
There you go. A lot of people don't know about that. So there are any number of things, from the economic to health care to international victories, such as, of course, killing Soleimani of Iran, killing Baghdadi of ISIS, the ISIS territorial caliphate used to be twice the size of New Jersey. It's now gone, totally erased. Under Obama, we heard that we'd be fighting these people for dozens of years. Well, their territorial caliphate it no longer exists. It's smaller than the hole on a putting green. And moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, recognizing the Golan Heights as part of Israel. We've debated that one for decades. Trump finally said, okay, you know what, let's just say it's part of Israel, and that was that. End of story. So there have been victories overseas, domestically, in terms of economics, in terms of healthcare, in terms of almost any area you can see in terms of public policy, and there have been significant steps forward by this president. About 90% of the time, solid, conservative, limited government, free market oriented, which is how I like those things.
When you go through these things, I mean, these are amazing accomplishments. When Obama said the new norm on GDP growth was in that 1 to 1.5% range, that manufacturing jobs aren't coming back, you know, it really drug people down. And then Donald Trump comes in, you know, Obama says, okay, so what's he going to do, wave a magic wand? Well, mm-hmm. DeRoy Murdoch, it kind of looks like he did.
Yeah, I think the magic wand is called Donald J. Trump. You know, what he did, which is different from the approach of Obama, is, number one, cut taxes. I think lowering the corporate tax rate from 35%, which was at the time either the highest or second highest in the world, down to 21%, which is one of the lowest on earth. Well, that alone says to companies, look, invest, produce, expand, start companies, expand companies, and they did exactly that. Number two, the companies that had foreign profits sitting overseas waiting for better weather, if you will, to bring their overseas profits back in the United States, about a trillion or so of those dollars have come back into the U.S. and have been reinvested in new plant, new equipment, and training programs, in improving human resources, et cetera. All those things have been great for American workers and American employees. Some of them, like, for example, Apple has brought back about $300 billion back into the U.S. They have expanded their Silicon Valley property. I think they've started some new manufacturing campuses here in the United States. All that money was just sitting in bank accounts overseas, basically gathering dust. So that's been very positive. Tremendous deregulation. For every new regulation imposed, 8 old regulations have been erased. That deregulatory effort has, again, given additional impetus to companies to get started and to expand. And then there's something very hard to measure, but it's also important, which is the overall tone. Under Obama, we heard, oh, you didn't build that. That's not your company. We built that. Shame on you. You're part of the 1%. You're part of the problem. How dare you? This 8 years of wagging fingers in the faces of successful people and saying, how dare you be successful? You must have gotten successful by robbing somebody. That entire incredibly negative, abrasive, corrosive tone is gone. Instead, what you've got is the president of the United States saying, wonderful, we're glad you're opening a company. This is great. Hire people. Expand your payroll. Make life great for your workers. Make life great for your employees. Keep up the good work. That sort of positive attitude says to people, you know, if I start a company or expand a company, I'm not going to have a whole squadron of federal inspectors come in and try to shut me down, or the president of the United States and people in the major cabinet agencies laughing at me or leaving me feeling intimidated. And in the absence of that sort of negative and very cold atmosphere, you get a warm, encouraging, positive atmosphere. Entrepreneurs and business people see this, and they do what we'd like them to do, which is start companies, expand companies, hire people, promote people, give people bonuses, and that's what's happening. That's why America's thriving today.
You know, DeRoy Murdoch, it seems to me, wouldn't everybody be celebrating this? I can't quite figure out why people are, A, you know, not talking about it. I think there's a lot of folks that don't even know this about Donald Trump. And why not? I mean, why don't we have everybody just saying, you know, talking about these great things that are happening?
There are people who hate Donald Trump's guts more than anything else. They hate his guts. I think they literally want him dead, and I don't exaggerate. I think they'd be really happy if this man fell asleep and didn't wake up one day. I think they would do cartwheels. They would have to restrain their glee if he died. And you look at, for example, at all these artists and musicians and sculptors who've done these depictions of President Trump decapitated with his head chopped off. I could send you a PowerPoint about a dozen examples of major cultural figures waving around Donald Trump's chopped off head. That's the level of hatred these people have for him. And so if he succeeds and gets anything right, they don't want to give him credit. They either will refuse to talk about it, they'll deny that he has anything to do with it. They'll say, oh, this finally is the Obama policy kicking in after 11 years, which is absurd and ridiculous. And they will do nothing to give him any credit because that will raise the possibility that he will be reelected, which they do not want to see. So therefore, you get the media, who should be honest and just give us the news and tell us what's happening. And they cover this stuff up. They don't talk about these things. They keep them obscured. And as a consequence, a lot of Americans who should be getting the basic information about what's happening in our country are not getting that. I'll give you one really awful example. Do you remember the attack on the Poe synagogue near San Diego? I think it was May of last year.
Yes.
A gunman walked in, opened fire in the synagogue. I think he killed one or two people, and he shot the fingers off of several of the fingers off the rabbi, Israel Goldstein. And a lot of people were very concerned. Oh, my God, is this the return of anti-Semitism? This is terrible. A lot of Jews and Gentiles who love him were terrified by all this. So the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, invited the rabbi, Israel Goldstein, of the Chabad Poe to come in to the White House Rose Garden, where there was a national prayer day or prayer breakfast or something like this going on. And he brought him to the Rose Garden on a beautiful sunny day, embraced him, hugged him, and said more or less, anti-Semitism is an evil thing. We need to drive it out. It has no place in our society. This is terrible. These attacks need to stop. The rabbi, in turn, said, Mr. President, I want to thank you for comforting me. I was in pain. I was in sorrow. I did not begin to heal until you called and spoke with me on the phone for about half an hour. You know how to heal people in pain. You are, and I'm almost quoting exactly now, you are, as we say in Yiddish, a mensch par excellence, unquote. Okay? Now, if you're Jewish and you're terrified of anti-Semitic attacks, or if you're like me and you have many Jewish friends and loved ones, and you're concerned about this, it would be very helpful to hear words of comfort from the President of the United States as he hugs a rabbi who's just 5 days earlier been injured in an anti-Semitic shooting. Seeing those two embracing would be very comforting. Conversely, if you were an anti-Semite and you hear the President of the United States saying, you're evil, don't be an anti-Semite, don't attack Jews, maybe that says to you, okay, well, I guess I'll cancel my attack, or maybe I'll keep my views to myself rather than express them. ABC Evening News, CBS Evening News, NBC Nightly News, you know how much time they spent covering that story?
No.
0 minutes, 0 seconds. No coverage whatsoever. Zippo.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I'm not saying they need to spend 10 minutes and cover the thing live necessarily, but they could say in passing, President Trump met with the rabbi from the Chabad Poe, and they discussed the shooting that took place 5 days ago. In other news, it could be a 10-second
sure.
brief little announcement with a video and a voiceover by the anchor. I'm not saying they need to spend endless time. Zero. None. And the reason for that is they don't want the American people to know that Donald J. Trump is not an anti-Semite, as they claim. He's not a neo-Nazi, as they like to contend. He's not a white supremacist or white nationalist, as they've said repeatedly and slanderously and libelously. They want to keep that complete misperception alive, and so they neither share with Jews and the Gentiles who love them the words of comfort, nor with anti-Semites the words of condemnation that they need to hear. None of that message gets out. It's censored by the big media. And so Jews remain terrified, and anti-Semites remain in an attack posture.
Wow, okay.
The big media are in cahoots and in bed with and colluding with and facilitating anti-Semites, neo-Nazis, et cetera, by that kind of behavior. They should be condemned in the loudest of tones, and scorn should pour upon them for an incredibly great height for that tremendous journalistic malpractice.
Oh, my gosh. Jeroy Murdoch, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll continue. I'm talking with Jeroy Murdoch about this important piece he had in the National Review, that Trump rounds third with an enviable big league record. This is things that you're not hearing from the mainstream media. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at KimMunson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am talking with DeRoy Murdoch. He is an American political commentator, contributor with Fox News. He is a contributing editor with National Review, a senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research, got his undergrad at Georgetown and his business degree at NYU. DeRoy, this is just such an important piece that you've written in the National Review about Trump rounds third with an enviable big league record. And in it, you say that one of the reasons that people hate him is because he did the unthinkable. He defeated Hillary Clinton. And I cannot believe that that is just the one thing that might drive somebody to make a decision about somebody else.
Yeah, I think that the left expected Hillary Clinton to win. They wanted her to win, they expected her to win. How could this reality TV star, this kind of loud and sort of what's the word I want to
brash, maybe
brash, high volume guy with the wacky blonde hair. How could he possibly win? Of course he's going to lose. She's going to win. Well, they wake up Wednesday morning and they stayed up Tuesday night of election night of 2016, and guess what? The orange man with the wacky blonde hair won, and they couldn't believe that, and they still don't believe it. They still don't accept it. And they come up with one excuse after another for why he won and Hillary Clinton lost. And it was that he stole it, that the Russians were involved, it was a Ukrainian plot, and on and on and on. And they just cannot accept the idea that this man won. And because of that, they've been fueling the impeachment, the resistance, everything else. And I cannot wait until election night of 2020 when he wins again, and probably by an even bigger margin. And those people, I don't know, I think their heads are just going to explode from coast to coast.
You know, DeRoy, I wonder if they're looking at polls that show that he really does look like he's going to win here in 2020. And so we're seeing so many wacky things happen in state and local areas regarding elections. Like out here in Colorado, there's a bill before the legislature that would allow 16-year-olds to vote in school board elections. I see all kinds of things that are happening to try to dilute people's voices or their votes. And I'm a little concerned about that, DeRoy.
Yeah, I think you should be. Look, I guess the idea is, it'll be just school board votes. And then next time it'll be mayor. And then, how about governor? Okay, well, how about federal? Yeah, it's all designed to move the electorate to the left, because people who are younger tend to be more on the left. People who are older tend to be a little more on the right. And then we've got, I know in San Francisco and other places, illegal aliens voting in local elections. This is absolutely appalling and disgusting. That needs to stop at once. And rather than come up with a credible, constructive program, the left comes up with all these little ridiculous schemes to try to let people vote who either never have before or who should be given no access to our ballot boxes. And they figure that they'll pump up their numbers that way, which is very sad. I mean, what the left really should do is abandon this effort at socialism and go back to what they used to do, which is try to figure out what can we do to make life better for people who are disadvantaged. One thing, if I were a Democrat, I'd be trying to do is say, look, right now the Dow is up and away, reaching again record highs. Another achievement of this president is creating conditions which have allowed the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the NASDAQ, and the S&P 500, and the other indices all to climb through the ceiling. About 55% of the country is invested in the stock market. It's not just millionaires and billionaires. People have 401ks and IRAs and company pensions, union pensions. All of those are now more valuable, thankfully. But 45% of the country approximately is not in the stock market. Why don't the Democrats say, look, it's wonderful, about half the country is benefiting from this stock market boom, but what about the other ones? What can we do to make life as easy as possible so that as many of these people who want to can open investment accounts and share in this bounty that we're all enjoying? That's the kind of thing that old-fashioned Democrats would have done. Now we've got the socialists who want to have wealth taxes and people say open borders, not open borders. They want no borders. Open borders you can close. No borders, they don't exist, which is what I think these people want. In-state tuition for illegal aliens, free medical care for illegal aliens, driver's licenses for illegal aliens, and this whole array of exotic far-left nonsense. And because of that, I think it's not surprising that you see President Trump's numbers going up and Democrats' numbers going down.
Well, and to that point, I think Donald Trump has figured this out as well regarding the 45%. In fact, DeRoy Murdoch, I think he has a real love for the working, you know, the blue-collar worker, that, you know, that young tech T-shirt worker. I mean, I think he has a real love for Americans. And so I think he wants to address this other 45% as well. He wants them to thrive and prosper, too.
I think he does, absolutely. I mean, he at his State of the Union address, he referred to this whole thing as being a blue-collar boom, unquote. Frankly, that's always the language you've heard out of Republicans. And this is a good thing. You know, again, it's the caricature that people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and others like to paint is just that people on Wall Street are getting wealthy while everyone else is starving and, you know, eating dog food or something ridiculous like this. We're seeing, amazingly enough, again, another huge advantage of this president's policies is we're seeing the rich getting richer, but the poor are getting richer too, and their increase in income is going up more quickly than it is for upper income folks. I believe the bottom 10% is seeing an increase in earnings of something like about 4.9% over the last couple of years. I believe that's the number. I don't have that in front of me at the moment. I'm sorry. Versus about 1.9% increase for the top 1% or top 10%. The top 10% are doing better, but the bottom 10% are moving up more quickly, which is what we want to see. We're not pulling down the rich to help the poor. Everyone's moving up, but those who have less are moving up more quickly, and I think that's pretty much an ideal situation.
Well, most definitely. You know, there's two ways to earn money, DeRoy Murdoch. One is to earn it, so come up with a service or a product that other people are willingly want to trade their hard-earned dollars for because they perceive that it makes their lives better or because they want to trade their dollars for that. Or there's the taking it. And we see taking it through a lot of public policy. I mean, I have to wonder how some of these Democrat candidates have the balance sheets they have by just being a politician. I don't quite understand that. And many times, you know, you can take wealth via policy or excessive and unpredictable taxation. And that is antithetical to the American idea, DeRoy Murdoch.
Antithetical to the American idea and also ineffective. You know, it may work for a year or two, but after a while people say, you know what, I don't need this. And either they leave the state or the city where these taxes are painful. I live in New York City, and I can tell you, I know people who said, I've had enough, I'm out of here. I know one man who's quite wealthy. He's probably got about $3 billion or so. He used to live on Park Avenue in a beautiful apartment. He moved out of there. He now lives in Florida. And in order to establish his residency in Florida and show that he's no longer a New Yorker, he actually has a motion-activated camera in his home. Every time he walks by it, it takes a picture of him in his home in Florida, and it puts the date and the time on it. So that if anybody in New York State says, oh, you were only in Florida for, you know, 120 days, he goes, no, it was actually 180 or 170, whatever the number is, 6 days, 6 months plus one, I guess it'd be 190 days. And he's got pictures showing, I was here that day at this time, that day at that time, that day at that time. And he keeps those images on a server in his home, and it's also copied onto a server sitting in a cave in Utah or Arizona or something like that in case his house burns down. This is the extent to which people go to avoid onerous and confiscatory and punitive taxes. And yet you have people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg and these others saying, yeah, let's hike the taxes on people with the notion they're going to sit there and say, okay, great, I'm happy to pay, and let's write bigger and bigger checks like it's no big deal. That defies – the problem with the left is that so much that they suggest just defies human nature. Human nature is to take a certain amount of pain, and once it hurts too much – you avoid the pain, and that also applies to taxation.
Well, and a quick point on that. Remember when the tax law changed and those people that had, you know, very expensive homes and big mortgages could no longer deduct that interest, above a certain level? And
yeah,
so
local taxation.
Yeah. So there was a picture in the newspaper here in Colorado that up in Boulder, which typically is a bastion of kind of a bunch of radical activists, the line to pay their taxes early so that they wouldn't, if they paid them the next year, they would not be able to take as much of a write-off. The line at the at the county's offices was so long, they took a picture of it and had in the newspaper. So the point to that is, no matter what side of the aisle people are on, They don't like to pay taxes like Bernie and Elizabeth. They just want somebody else to pay their taxes.
Oh, that's very true. And I'll give you – that's a wonderful example. I didn't know about that. Here are another couple. Massachusetts has, I guess, very expensive yacht tax. Consequently, former Senator and former Secretary of State John Kerry has his boat registered in Newport, Rhode Island. So he saves on the Massachusetts yacht tax. He doesn't pay that. And there is a measure in Massachusetts, which we really should have, the IRS should have this available on your 1040 form, which is basically if you don't think you're being taxed enough, you can fill in a box and say, look, I'm at the 25% tax rate. I really want to pay 45. Please, here's my income times 45%. I'm sending this extra money in. They collect about $3,000 a year on that in Massachusetts. Nobody does. One of the most liberal states. And in fact, former Congressman Barney Frank, somebody I guess saw his tax form, and he didn't fill in that extra box. He just pays what he's supposed to pay, no extra. And somebody said, you're a big liberal, you're a big government guy. What's wrong with you? Why aren't you paying extra tax? And he said, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, well, the reason is that I feel that any extra money I have would be much better served in private charity than if I send it to the government. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, that's like something you'd hear the president of Heritage Foundation, the president of Cato Institute say, only it's at that time, Congressman Barney Frank, one of the biggest leftists in Congress, that comment. So I think deep down, a lot of these people understand this stuff, but they expect some rich guy somewhere to pay the bills for everybody else.
And you know what? That doesn't work. It's based on envy. So, hey, DeRoy Murdoch, we're out of time, but what a great conversation. And be sure and check out this piece in National Review, Trump Rounds Third with an Enviable Big League Record. Thanks so much, DeRoy. Greatly appreciate it.
Kim, great talking to you. Thanks very much now.
Okay. And our quote for today is from Donald John Trump. He says, get going, move forward, aim high, plan a takeoff. Don't just sit on the runway and hope someone will come along and push the airplane. It simply won't happen. Change your attitude and gain some altitude. Believe me, you'll love it up here. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you. And God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them.